Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Hello, the Mansion House. Are England going to win the Grand Slam? Ah, come on. Are England going to win the Grand Slam? Correct. Are Wales? They obviously can't do it, but are they going to win the championship? Who's going to win the Grand Slam? Who's going to win the Grand Slam? I'd settle for a championship at this point, to be honest. All right, we are at the Mansion House tonight. As ever, people have been getting in touch with us on the hashtag OTBHRC. Thanks very much. OTBHRC is the hashtag if you want to get in touch with us tonight. You can also tweet us at Off the Ball, or you can text the show on 53106. And of course, fans get more out of the game. Exclusive member-only events just like this one and tickets to Champions Cup and Challenge Cup games. All you got to do is join today at HeinekenRugbyClub.com. We've had one absolutely amazing number seven in the house. It's time to get another second legendary number seven. Please give it up for France legend Serge Bettson. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Good, thank you.
Yeah. I think the easiest thing for us to do is to have a quick stroll down memory lane. Who doesn't like seeing Johnny Wilkinson get absolutely creamed? Have a look.
England. Lucky to get away with that one. Not taken cleanly.
Boom!
Wilkinson across here for Cohen. Cohen flipped it back. Poitrano!
That is bullshit.
And
referee.
The referee has seen something behind the play on Johnny Wilkinson.
He was flat, absolutely creamed, still lying flat on his face, sucking in the big ones. He got a beauty.
This could be curtains for Serge Bettson.
Did you get a yellow card?
You were committed. This is football. It's incredible. It was lying on the floor for 5 minutes until the referee sent me off.
You got a yellow card?
Yes, yellow card. Semi-final of World Cup. Yeah, of course. And of course, after I get a yellow card, he stood up, kicking the drop goal, etc. Then this is football, not rugby.
Of course. He never did it to anybody Irish. Oh no, not to any of ours.
The Irish now will try and work it outside their own 22. O'Gara, Steppy. Stringer arrives at the breakdown, but
poor ball. Tremendous work by Bettson, then straight on to O'Gara. And referee Jonathan Catlin going back for the knock-on.
Timeout.
This is a week apart.
We could be here all night looking at sevens and have done this to Raj.
Straight out of the top. Excellent tackle. Plays it very wide, Bettson.
Brilliant tackle.
Bad ball placement from Raj.
But O'Gara still on the ground after copping a little bit of treatment from
7 minutes gone.
Breakaway Serge Bettson came over the top. Fantastic cover defence. It looked like O'Gara could have got away. But that's what breakaways do. Chop them down at full flight.
Bully.
He's pretty good though, right? They were clapping more after the Wilkinson bit. That World Cup in 2003, that French team were pretty good.
Yeah, that was your last
my
game?
That's my last game. That's another one, bad memory to bring up again. Thanks very much. I loved your choice of guests this evening. Yes, thank you, Serge.
I'm sorry, Keith.
There was a couple of tears after that game.
They were very good, they were. We got it very wrong. I think we were almost relieved after the 99 World Cup of getting into the quarterfinal, and that almost felt like a result of sorts because we'd nearly beaten Australia. We'd lost by 2 points. Obviously beaten Argentina in a very close game where we won by 2 points, who had knocked us out of the World Cup in 99. So for us to get into the quarterfinal against France, who we'd beaten a couple of times in previous years in the Six Nations, so we weren't afraid of them. We realized that they were a very good side, but we got so much wrong that day. We got our game plan terribly wrong, and they were at their best, and they smashed us, and the game was over before halftime. After 30 minutes, they knew it was in the bag.
Every pass was perfect, French pass, none of the Irish passes, where every French pass was in the right spot. Everything was just, it was horrible. When those games, they just kind of unfold so quickly, you can't kind of catch up with them. And I remember the week before, 2 weeks before, I had a member of the IRFU came up to me and he said, listen, I just think it's something very important that you know that if we lose the game against Argentina, we lose 7.5 million. And he said, I think it's important, you know, and I think the team should know that. I said, do you? I'm not going to say that to the team. I said, but thanks very much. We're not under any pressure now anyway. And we were, there was a fair element. I remember that game against Argentina, and I actually do think it affected us in the weeks afterwards, was it was the strangest atmosphere of any game I've ever played in, and we won. And it was just stomach churning for the whole thing.
I don't know if there were too many games I was more nervous just to get it done, because we knew the pressure, because in 99 it was a shock, whereas you know they were a much improved team from 99 as well, and that level of scrutiny, knowing we can't screw up two World Cups on the bounce. So to get that done, it was just this huge weight lifted off our shoulders, but it felt like a win in itself, which...
Did you go mental? Did you go on the piss? Is there any, like, woohoo? I mean, I more than normal.
No.
Back then, it was all the same, you know, it was...
Yeah, but not even then, and we played Australia, and we said, if we could beat Australia, we're going to get into a better quarter-final.
We'd try and get to Scotland
in the quarter-final. That'd be a much better one for us. And we put a huge amount into that game against, and we lost 17-16 to Australia in a good game. Again, making mistakes. Humphreys
misses a kick to win it, doesn't he?
Missed a kick. A couple of kicks were kicked, tapped and gone. You know, there was a little bit of lack of composure, and we just didn't get it. And then we said, okay, well, we're that close to Australia. We're that close to getting an easier one. This is going to be a tough one. Let's get ready for France.
And they blitzed you from the get-go.
You're fantastic. I mean, it was horrendous. And I can tell you, this is not nice for me, but about 20 minutes gone in the second half, and I remember I was walking, nothing unusual in that, but I was walking across the field. I said, Jesus, I've only 20 minutes left in my career. I'm going to have to start running now. And we actually played well for the last 20 minutes. Like, a lot of guys kind of suddenly realised this was the end of this World Cup. And we upped our performance. Well, he just totally took the foot off the gas. You were just kind of messing with us at that stage. It was actually, I hate you now. I really do. I'm looking at you, looking into my face, and all I can see is pity. That's disgusting.
I'm sorry, Keith.
Did you love that World Cup, though?
Yes, part of it, because you already starting with that yellow card, which still hurt me today, because we lost the semi-final against England. But the overall was my first World Cup, and I really enjoyed the preparation, the fact that you work really hard for one objective is to achieve the final, and at some point it was a big frustration for me. But overall, we had a great tournament. We played an amazing game against Ireland, but the game against England was, for me, the top hand of the tournament. And I started really well the game because I scored the first try, and the rest of the game was so difficult. I remember we trained all weekend with sun. And we didn't realize that on the day of the semi-final against England, the rain started from 6 in the morning until the game finished. And we didn't have any solution, we didn't have any game plan. We have only one game plan, which was the sunny and play the ball as we played the quarterfinal. And we get caught with that weather where Johnny excelled in kicking, boring stuff. And... And yes, it was a little bit a frustrating moment, but overall we enjoyed the tournament. And the point I made from that mistake was that we knew France going to organize the World Cup 2007, and I made the point that I will be part of the French team 4 years after, and that was my plan. After the frustration, you need to find solution, you need to get and motivation for the next achievement.
Yeah, so it was, you used that as inspiration for the rest of your career. But just to go back to the incident itself, do you feel now, looking at it, that it was a yellow card? That?
Of course, no. What do you think? No, it's true that on that type of game, it's a lot of pressure. Semi-final of World Cup, a big player in front, Johnny Wilkinson, the referee have to make decisions. But I have to say, Johnny, the fact that he was lying on the floor like he did for most a minute, that put a pressure to the referee, and he have to make decisions. And I have to say, I was on my best because I wasn't that late. And when you put when you put
he wasn't as late as he normally was.
Yeah, when you put that in slow motion, that make really hard to everyone. But
you're not bitter about it at all.
No. Of course. And I have to say, the pressure and all that things, the referee make decisions, and unfortunately, I had that yellow card. I have to say, it was really frustrating. I don't know if you're going to show the video. I was crying after the game. I was so frustrated because when you work hard, you put a lot of sacrifice for this moment, and it go wrong. You have to apologize to your teammate, and I have to do that because I was so angry with myself.
That French team that you were a part of was so brilliant. It was full of like absolute legends of the game, to the point where you're not actually seven in that game. You had number six on your back there.
Yeah, the truth of six or seven, I found out when I joined Wasp a few years ago that in France, number six is open side, number seven is blind side, and the reverse in the Ireland on the UK. And I used to play six because I was chasing these guys.
Why is that?
Same in
South Africa. So yeah. We are the two countries.
Because we don't know the game. We do.
Typically French.
Yes, it's true. It's
Why
true.
Not?
Yeah. It's true that we don't have the explanation of why open side or blind side. We don't have that. It's true. Then that's why I used to play six, because I was chasing or tackling more than Olivier Magne, who were playing the ball with the backs. Then now I know that I'm going to get back to France to explain that to everyone.
Okay. That's your homework.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got an amazing backstory that you're born in Cameroon and your mum takes you and your siblings to Paris when you're about 9 years of age.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you remember the first time you pick up a rugby ball?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I was 12 when the first time a friend of mine asked me to if I want to try to play rugby, and I say yes, why not? It was in a long time ago, 1993, 94. And you was born at that time? No.
Yeah.
I was well born. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm joking.
He's just well preserved. He moisturizes.
Yeah. And I turn up. He said to me, "Yes, come next Wednesday at 3 o'clock." And I turn up in the club called Clichy in Paris region, and I found something really intriguing. Not the rugby ball, because I didn't really know how to catch the ball, but the fact that people who didn't know me gave me their time and welcoming me at the club as a kid and show me what rugby is about.
Yeah.
I really like that. I enjoy the passion around the rugby club, and I decided I'm going to come back again and again. And I fell in love of what rugby is about, the value and the fact that rugby made me discover my character, made me discover that I love teamwork, team spirit, and I play to your mate and nearly die for your teammate is something really important for me.
And so then when you actually end up playing for France, it's like it's a huge journey to go from a city in Cameroon with like 300,000 people, 400,000 people living there to playing for the French nation. Was that an easy enough journey for you to make? And when you play for France, is it a straightforward relationship with the jersey at that point?
Not really. It's gone step by step, because when I started playing rugby in Paris region, I moved to Biarritz in Basque Country when I was 17, and I played 17 years for Biarritz. And step by step, I started learning what rugby is about and what make you being a professional rugby player. And I make, like I said, I made a lot of sacrifice. I worked really hard to be the best player I can be. And I was fortunate that I joined Biarritz Club Olympic with Serge Blanco, Pascal Ondas, all that legends who make the French team.
And nearly Brian O'Driscoll, of course.
Yeah, I remember him talking about going to Biarritz sometimes.
It's an incredible contract negotiation skills.
A serious talker. Yeah. I thought about it a couple of... No, I genuinely gave it some thought after in 2006. 2006. 2004 was just for a bit of Dutch auctioning, but 2006 I gave it some serious thought. Went down, saw the facilities.
Nice part of the world.
Saw the setup,
yeah.
Very quiet during the winter, apparently.
It is, yeah.
You were liking doing surf, like something like this? Or?
Listen, this skin doesn't take to the sun at all, so yeah. I don't know.
There was Marcel Martin.
Yeah, definitely.
Was there, but like, he was like a lion of a man, incredible. I nearly went to Biarritz, actually.
Did you, yeah?
99, 2000.
That skin definitely doesn't take to the sun.
No, the bald head would have been blistered, you know. But it was, but he was the most engaging guy. And, Serge being down there as well. It was, which for me was one of the reasons to play rugby, was Serge Blanco. Because he was a beautiful rugby player. The way he played was beautiful. It looked like the most exciting thing you could possibly do. I was just wondering, when you were talking, that at 12 years of age, you know, you're new to a city, you're new to a country, and you recognize that they are that open to you. Did you recognize it as a child? Because I wonder, do we take certain things for granted when we look at rugby? And we talk about the values and the culture of rugby a lot. But do we take it for granted that there is that sense of inclusivity at the start?
No, I don't think so. One of the things that make me realize that is because I grew up with my mom without my dad, and my mom was working all the time. Then I was either at my apartment or going out to go to play rugby or to be with my mate in rugby. That was my balance between my family life and the fact that in rugby, I had a lot of friends, a lot of good friends who are still my friend today. Then, yeah, it was a component of every time I went back to home, I need space, I need to run, I need to have friends with me to play, and that was the balance I had, because otherwise I was in the street or whatever. Then I think that's the key component is. Find a friend who are really nice to you and try to keep staying with him and be in a positive environment, like a club. And that's why after such a love experience, I decided to create my charity with the same meaning, which is we in Africa, we help underprivileged kids through rugby, but there is a certain environment where we can help them to go to school and get medical assistance. Yeah, rugby is such an important sport for that spirit.
It's an incredible story, and everybody should check out the charity, actually, as well. You can find it pretty easily on Google. The other big thing that happens in your life is you go to Wasps kind of when, you know, it seems like a lot of players play out the last couple of years of their career, but you go and really discover a love of London and a love of life in England as well.
Yeah, it's a life. Life is about opportunity and challenge. And it's true that when I decided to retire after the frustration World Cup in 2007, I didn't really want to play rugby anymore. And one of the English coaches in Bristol asked me to go to play in Bristol, and I've it's funny because I called Raf Ibanez to say, what do you think about Bristol? And he said to me, come to London, don't go to Bristol because there's nothing there. And I don't know if there's people from Bristol here, but
unlucky.
No. And 2 days after, I spoke with the Wasps coach who said to me, then I'm going to go to London. And I took over my family and kids, and I have to say it was a big challenge for everyone. I didn't speak English before, I didn't really know what's going on, and I have to deal with all these changes, and I have to say it's one of the great opportunities I had in my career to be able to move to from Biarritz, the sun, the beach, to the raining area.
I feel like you going to Harlequins. You didn't speak English going there either.
No, I spoke my variation of it. Yeah.
They passed you up no time though.
They struggled with the Killaloe accent, you know. But I know it's all right. I changed them. I was quite happy.
Yeah,
with
fair
that,
play.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Tonight we haven't given you the chance to win a pair of tickets to a Heineken Cup quarterfinal for either Leinster or Munster. Sorry, Ulster/Connacht fans. To qualify, you've been sitting in our big green chair and telling us your best rugby stories. But I do believe we've someone else sitting in the green chair right now. You're here, Martin Williams, to tell us about the dark arts of the number 7.
Oh, I thought I was telling stories on Woody and Drickle.
Exactly. You've been on the receiving end of some of the dark arts from those two.
I have. When I was contacted earlier in the week by the producer to ask any stories on Drickle and Woody, it's always one of them. I was very careful. I'm coming to Dublin. I don't want to dish the dirt on Irish royalty. I might not get out here alive. But I just immediately, two things came to mind. Very, very similar situations, actually. My first is from a game against Ireland, 1999. Up in Wembley, of all places, because they were building the Millennium Stadium. Remember being 5 minutes into the game, first ruck. I'm lying at the bottom of the ruck. Keith Wood, the legendary Keith Wood, who I looked up to all my career, stood over the top of me, and I'm thinking, he's looking down at me in the eye, thinking he's going to help me up here. No. Size 12 boot, right on the shin, 12 stitches. So that was my welcome to Mr. Wood.
Whoa!
And a very similar scenario a few years later, must have been 7 or 8 years later, from a Mr. O'Driscoll, who we sat up there as if butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. Believe me, I remember it was a Leinster Cardiff Blues game where Brian had travelled over to Cardiff, one of his rare occasions in a Pro 14 game, that he came over to join us. And very similar situation again. I've actually got my hand on the ball. And instead of Brian politely asking me to remove my hand from the ball, he stamps on my hand, and he's looking at me in the eye as well. So, and the result of that is now I can't wear my wedding ring on this finger. I've got to wear it on my right hand. So I
know your pain, Logan. I know your pain.
I just want a public apology from both of them, because I've never done anything to those two.
You'll be waiting the rest of your bloody life.
Don't slow our ball down.
I was going to ask you a couple of questions. You can't go on the wrong side of a ruck. You know that. That's pure stupidity. And what the hell were you doing not wearing shin guards?
I couldn't afford them, mate. I'm from Wales. We couldn't afford shin guards.
I can't remember that, but I'm glad I did it.
Can Drickle?
Vaguely, but...
Games were so fast then.
That's the thing.
Mate, they were, honestly, they were 3-month bans for both of them in the modern day game, but they've got away with it, haven't they?
Yes.
And a yellow card for you for holding onto the ball.
Yeah. Did you whinge on the ground and lie like Johnny Wilkinson?
No, I didn't.
Minutes.
I got up and pretended it hurt, yeah.
Is your finger legit, like, yeah, misshapen as a result of that specific incident?
That wasn't from that.
That
Lucas.
Was from
no
Brian
way.
O'Driscoll.
Hold it up flat so we can see.
In 2006.
Hold it up. No, no.
Can you do that? That way. That way's the best way. Commit.
Oh,
that way,
that's the way. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way.
And he sat up there so sweet, isn't he? And
Jesus. And so, what the hell were you doing in Cardiff?
That's the most shocking thing of the whole story.
He flew over particularly to kick Martin Williams. Yeah.
Do you know what? I've been injured in the lead up to it, clearly, and I needed a bit of game time. That's the only explanation.
Big European game a few weeks later, probably, yeah.
And is this before or after you'd been teammates on the Lions? The Cardiff incident, obviously.
Oh, after. Yeah. I thought we were friends, but obviously, yeah.
We were roomies in 01.
We were roomies.
Yeah.
So he knows you can take it. That's why you dish it out. If it was like some no-mark, he wouldn't be standing on it.
I know in a heartbeat if the roles were reversed, he wouldn't have even thought.
Absolutely.
He wouldn't even give me a look.
He was too smart to get caught. Yeah.
Is there a KFC story as well? Is there a...
No, that's the good side of Drickle, isn't it? Where I suppose...
Cut that out. We don't
he has enough good talk.
Go on,
yeah,
go on,
so No. Only I can remember 2009, obviously the second test in South Africa where... The man had flown into Danny Rousseau and did a bit of damage to himself, got knocked out, and we were rooming actually that game, and we lost the series 2-0, and all the boys went out for a commiseration drink, and in fairness to the guy, he came in 2 a.m. in the morning, absolutely off my face, and we're all the same. Well, you just want something to eat, don't you? And what the man done, he had a KFC waiting on my bed for me, in fairness to him. So, good tourist.
Guilt after breaking your hand all those years before.
It wasn't your secret stash midnight feast for when you woke up in the middle of the night hungry.
I'm just surprised that there was any left. I don't know, you've put yourself in certain positions, and everyone on a night out has made the most horrendous sandwiches of their lives, trying to get the dregs of whatever's left. So you know how good it is when something nice is left there for you. I used to always bring my missus a kebab home, whether she was out or not. Worst case scenario, I got a second kebab.
Why weren't you on the night out exactly?
I'd concuss myself.
That, okay, yeah. So it was an injury, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You weren't barred or anything. Yeah, they're good stories. Well done. You're allowed to come back.
Am I allowed back? No.
Yes.
Am I up? Well, where am I going? Am I up?
Yeah, so for now, we're going to get Martin back up on stage. And so that was one way that you could have entered our competition to win tickets. The other way is to keep tweeting with the hashtag OTBHRC. And at the end of the evening, we're going to get two of our contestants up on stage to with the opportunity of winning our quiz. And you might have noticed the big squares over there. We have a blindside flanker challenge coming your way in part four. In part three, though, we're going to look back at some of the more amazing elements of a two-time Grand Slam winner, Martin's career. We're going to take a quick break. Ireland are going to win this thing, right? Come on!
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.